Hello, this is Mike Swanson. I'm the author of the book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In a few moments, another episode of The Great Parallax Views will begin. But before it starts, let me tell you about my book. It's available at Amazon.com, The War State. It's about how the United States became a global superpower after World War II and has brought us to this situation. Grab the book at Amazon.com after the show.
I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
You know, we're not talking about the issues facing the communities in this country. And I think that is what alt media provides during an election season that you don't get from the corporate press. Hey, Parallax Views listeners, on this edition of the program, you'll get to hear my recent appearance on the Along the Line radio program with Dr. Nolan Higdon, Nicholas Bahan III, and Janice Domingo. If you are unfamiliar with the Along the Line radio program, it is affiliated with our friends at Project Censored, and on this appearance, I discuss with Nolan, Nicholas, and Janice the importance of alternative media this election season. Why don't we get straight to the conversation?
All right, we're now joined by J.G. Michael, who's produced, hosted, and edited Parallax Views since the spring of 2018, operating under the belief that everyone has a story to tell and an insight to offer. J.G. has published over 200-plus editions of the Parallax Views podcast, which features conversations with New York Times bestselling authors, notable academics, investigative journalists, entertainers, and many other fascinating personalities from a multitude of different backgrounds. His previous guests have included Noam Chomsky, Peter Dale Scott, whistleblower Tony Natale, and New York Times bestselling investigative journalist Greg Palas, as well as Nolan Higdon. I was on this podcast. It was amazing. All right, J.G. Michael, welcome to Along the Line.
How's it going? Glad to be on.
Going good, man. Hey, why don't you kind of tell folks about, you know, why you started this podcast, why you chose the name, and you know, what sort of people, what things people could expect when they tune in?
So I started the podcast after a few months of working on another podcast for a critical theory imprint known as Zero Books. They've released a lot of really interesting sort of left theory books. And then I finally decided to start my own podcast. I wanted to go in a little bit of a different direction, more nuts and bolts journalism in a lot of ways. And I decided upon the name Parallax Views because of two reasons. It has a sort of double meaning. The first was I was at one point really interested in the Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek. And he had a book called The Parallax View. And the other reason was I love the movie Parallax View with Warren Beatty because it's this really great sort of paranoid conspiracy thriller that came out of the 70s Watergate era. And I felt that it went with the mood of the show. And it also appeals to different audiences. The movie fans like the name if they know about the movie. The left-wing theory fans think it's Zizek. So I sort of bring in all kinds of different people with that name.
Awesome. The reason why I wanted to have you on the program is, you know, we spend our lives in these programs doing a lot of critiques of the media system. And we herald a lot of the so-called quote-unquote new media, but basically folks like yourself who are given a platform for voices that have long been ignored in the corporate press. So how do you kind of see like this kind of, if we can call it like movement online to give spaces for voices that are blocked out of the corporate press? And how do you see yourself kind of in that?
I think there's been a lot of good developments with new media. Sometimes I worry that, you know, new media may end up going the same way as old media, that there'll be a lot of like new celebrity class type of stuff going on with our own alt media personalities. But I think we can also avoid that. And my whole point with Parallax Views is to sort of, as I told, say, in the intro to the show, I sort of want to give a voice to everyone I possibly can that I just find interesting. I think everyone has a story to tell. And I think those of us in the alt media give a voice to a wide range of people that are not heard in the corporate media. I was just reading a news story today about the federal government apparently labeling DDoS, the people who helped leak the blue leaks, which are the leaks about cops in America. They're being attacked, you know, by the federal government. No one's covering that. So I emailed a journalist about it today. He's going to come on the show on Monday, because if the corporate media isn't going to cover it, I figure, well, I might as well do it. And, you know, that's how it all started for me too. I just picked up a snowball microphone, started contacting people, and got to it. And I think that's the great thing about new media, is anyone can really produce content and cover the stories they think are important.
Hey, JG, can I ask you, so how do you protect yourself in an environment of surveillance capitalism from being co-opted, even as you're attempting to advertise your program and gain new listeners through, you know, maybe social media resources, et cetera? How do you sort of deal with that kind of essential, what Nolan and I are calling in a book that we're working on, podcaster's dilemma?
Could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So one of the things that we're really concerned with is that podcasts have to use social media for or do use social media for advertising. They do have websites, and they do use different forums for putting their material out. Some of it's Anchor, yes. Some of it's SoundCloud. Some of it's YouTube, like we use YouTube quite a bit. But these are also sites where, when our listeners and viewers go to them, their behavior, assuming that they're not using VPNs, their behavior is surveilled and things are marketed to them. Because one of the things that's interesting about capitalism is that capitalism is able to market anything, including anti-capitalism. It can sell you something on anti-capitalism too, which then winds up just being, you know, you're just falling into the capitalist system. So at the same time that you want to get this wonderful content out, how do you protect, or have you thought about how you protect yourself and your listeners from corporate intrusion and possibly even showing up on, because this is sort of one of my fears, having my stuff up there on YouTube while somebody's viewing it, while there might be an NRA ad on the side, just to give an example.
I've definitely had frustrations about that kind of thing. I mean, especially with the fact that ultimately as a podcaster and a media content creator, we're all sort of paying rent to, you know, websites like Podbean or Patreon. And there's also an aspect of it that worries me with the whole Patreon model. You know, you have to create these different benefits for your, you know, subscribers. And there's more and more people that are offering, like, you get to decide the subject of the next show. And I'm like, that could backfire very easily. And I kind of wonder if the models we have for new media right now, in the form of Patreon or some of these sort of digital rent website spaces that we inhabit, if they are the best way to do things. I kind of wish that we had, you know, more podcasters coming together and forming like networks for their podcasts, because there's a million and one, you know, alt media podcasts now. And I feel like we need to catalog more of them in like one place.
That's what I say. If you were tasked with creating a network, could you speak a little bit about what that network would look like? I mean, what some of the rules, guidelines, community standards might be?
You know, I think that if I were to start a network, I would want to have a diversity of voices. I know that sounds so cliche now. You have all these advertising companies talking about how they care about diversity when they really don't. But I really would, if I could start a network, I would love to see a diverse range of voices, as long as they're not, you know, jumping down, you know, bigoted sort of rabbit holes in the process. I think it's good to have a diversity of voices, you know, people from the Black community, the Latino community, people from journalism, people from theory and philosophy. I think that's what I would love to see in a network, because I think each of us has a piece to the puzzle, right? Does that so make
like
sense?
Realistic diversity.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Like realistic diversity as opposed to like Hollywood diversity where you get your
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of the day.
That is the best way to put it, actually. That's spot on.
Speaking of sort of this diversity of views, you're in what state are you in? You're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't ask this question, since we have an election year, supposedly we're in one. And you're in Pennsylvania, right? Ends up being an important state for most presidential election cycles. How do you see your role as a podcaster? Because you have some pretty influential guests on your show. You share a diversity of views. How do you kind of see your role in like an election era and in a democracy as a podcaster?
I was thinking about that a lot yesterday after watching that. I think it was Meet the Press. Kamala Harris was on Meet the Press discussing a number of issues, but she talked about how we have to fight racism because of national security reasons. And she was referring to Russian interference. And I thought, you know, I'm seeing everyone cover this specific interview, but no one was mentioning the thing that popped up in my head, which was, you know, we should fight racism because it's the right thing to do. But do we have to cite national security? You know, ever since the war on terror and 9/11, everything is national security. I've even heard people say with coronavirus, we have the war on COVID-19. I'm thinking to myself, wow, we've completely normalized this militarized national security state. I mean, I would even say that there's parts of the country that are essentially police state zones now. And you don't really hear people talk about that during election season. So I feel like for me, I want to put a spotlight, so to speak, on the issues that I think go ignored in the mainstream press. Nolan, I know you're a fan of Matt Taibbi. Mm-hmm. And Matt made a really good point during the last election cycle that a lot of people in the corporate press are very disconnected from what's going on in, you know, the communities around the U.S. because they're isolated in their own little bubble. And oftentimes when they're on the election trail, they're, you know, hobnobbing with the politicians, having dinners with them, drinking wine with Hillary Clinton. And I think it creates a disconnect, and it leads to an issue where, you know, we're not talking about the issues facing the communities in this country. And I think that is what alt media provides during an election season that you don't get from the corporate press.
Yeah, I first kind of noticed, or I guess noticed, I first kind of really took seriously the power of podcasting in during this 2019, I think it was, with Joe Rogan, when he, you know, he said he was going to endorse Bernie Sanders. I always had liked his show for bringing on a diversity of views, like views I totally disagree with, but I never get to hear in depth. So he had a cool show in that. But when he said he endorsed Bernie Sanders, the political class and corporate media freaked out, as if this like entertainer turned podcaster was going to somehow shift the election. If you notice, since then he no longer has guests on to talk about politics like at all. He said he's not going to do it, and he hasn't. But to me, that was kind of the first illustration of like, wow, they really do see this podcasting community as kind of a threat, because by having the interviews you have, and like you said, giving those alternative perspectives, right, rather than a militaristic perspective on how to solve race, for example, right, I think it shows that you don't need them. And that's like really scary to them, that the electorate doesn't need the so-called traditional press. So do you kind of see, you talked about how you're worried about it getting co-opted. Do you kind of see this as a replacement, or do you think they'll always kind of be competing? Where do you see it going from here?
I guess the thing I worry about is, you know, alt media just becoming a form of entertainment, rather than something that is educational or journalistic. There's a lot of, you know, left of center sort of alt media podcasts that I like that sort of toe that line in the same way, you know, say The Daily Show did when I was growing up, where, well, it's sort of comedy, but it's also political, maybe news. But, you know, when you're toeing that line, I think it can very easily become sort of infotainment that doesn't push people to really get involved in their communities or cover the stories in depth. I don't know, a cynical haha nihilism. And a lot of times I think with a lot of younger podcasters, especially, people can get caught up in this sense of micro celebrity, like, oh, I need this many Twitter followers, and if I say this or if I cover this story, I'll lose followers. And that's what I mean by I worry sometimes that the alt media could become more like the mainstream media, especially if people are pursuing celebrity more than, you know, seeking out the stories that matter to our community.
Seeking celebrity, okay. And certainly also seeking money to sustain themselves in this. I mean, at this point in time, it seems to me that podcasting is a public service. I'm not asking you to get into the financing of your particular podcast, but maybe if you could speak to that too, how your, you know, so what is the structure that allows you to continue to offer your podcast as a public resource for actual facts in media?
The honest answer to that would be a great deal of privilege, just in my upbringing and my financial situation. Mm-hmm. The other aspect I think of it is that I do make enough money, just barely enough to sustain myself, and I enjoy what I do, so I'm keeping at it, and hopefully it grows over time. But yeah, the money incentive is there for a lot of podcasters. The thing is, I think people look at podcasts like the Joe Rogan Experience, or, you know, say Chapo Trap House, and they think, oh, I can do that, and I'll be like making as much money as they do, because some of those podcasts can make as much as, you know, 80K a year on Patreon. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a very, very small number of podcasts that achieve that. So if you're getting into alt media because you think you're going to be that big podcast that pulls in all the dough, then you're in it for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Remind folks where they can find your podcast, and where they can find like your interviews, that kind of stuff.
Parallaxviews.podbean.com. And also, since we were talking about money, I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/parallaxviews. I'm on Twitter @viewsparallax. And I have a lot of content that I think crosses over with what folks hear about on Along the Line. and Project Censored. So I think we've had crossover guests too.
JG, actually, yeah. On crossover, I would like to do a Netflix episode on Parallax View. I actually also like that film quite a bit, and that's how I connected with your podcast. It'd be nice to have you in house to kind of go through that film as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But since you just discussed, networking, is there a specific or any specific podcasts out there that you could recommend to us or even recommend to our listeners that you're listening to right now that would probably be a really great source of information or you know, alt media that you could recommend?
You know, I don't get to listen to as many podcasts as I'd like to, but I was thinking about this earlier today. When it comes to alt media, a lot of people focus on the podcasts, right? And to me, I think there needs to be more of a light shone on just alternative media websites. For instance, Project Censored or Who, What, Why, Covert Action Magazine, which just had a big relaunch, Counterpunch. A lot of these websites people don't talk about as much as the podcasts. But I think in a lot of way they provide the meat for a lot of these podcasts. They provide us with material to talk about, what to keep an eye on. And I think we should give a lot more credit to these alt media websites that are going beyond just doing podcasts, or they're doing written word stuff or video stuff. I really think that's important right now.
You know, I want to... point out what you're saying right now, and this gets to the heart of Janice's question as well, that one thing I've noticed really changed in like the last maybe 10, 15 years was when I first sort of came into the alternative media space, if you will, they were all competing against each other to be like the most left or the most woke. In the last like 10 or 15 years, it does seem like they've gotten more of like a punk rock attitude of where you promote your cohort and your colleagues rather than compete against them. And I like that. That's more my style, and I like that attitude in the alt media right now. That, you know, it's really our goal to kind of shine light on the great work other folks are doing rather than destroy competition.
Can I make one more comment that reminds me of a podcast I do want to recommend? I have a New York friend, Jamie Peck, Sean, and Andy. They do the Antifada podcast. It's really good. They're connected to Sam Cedar and the Majority Report. Little bit farther to the left than Sam is, but it's a really popular up-and-coming show, and I'd really recommend The Antifada.
Cool. All right, JG Michael, thank you so much for coming on along the line. And folks, check out Parallax Views.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation, my appearance on the Along the Line radio program. Check it out at projectcensored.org. And thanks to Nolan, Nicholas, and Janice for hosting me. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@protonmail.com. And of course, if you can, support me on Patreon at patreon.com/ParallaxViews. That's patreon.com/ParallaxViews. Producers credit shoutouts to Amelia, Mark, Martin, Brace, John, Zach, Gratz, Ted, and Mickey. Join those listeners in getting your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views at the $10 or $15 tier on my Patreon at, again, patreon.com/ParallaxViews. That's patreon.com/ParallaxViews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views.
with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views. With Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say, don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.